Back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. My name is Ben Stone, and this is podcast number 186. Today is Monday, August 13th, 2012, and with me today is Kai.
Hello.
We haven't had a chance to have her on the podcast that often, so it's really great to have her back, just like the olden days when we used to podcast together all the time. And for those newer listeners who don't know who Kai is my daughter. And as we always say, as far as we know, we are the only father-daughter, anarchist, anarcho-capitalist, libertarian podcasting team on the internet / radio today.
Today, this moment. We could throw in a few more modifiers in there.
I want to give the real quick commercial for the events in Washington, D.C. on the 18th. That's this coming Saturday.
This Saturday.
This Saturday, the 18th, in Washington, D.C., near the Reflecting Pool, that's located 3rd Street Southwest between Maryland and Jefferson. What you need to do if you're anywhere in that area is get down there, take some food or something, a bucket of chicken, anything, whatever, something to share, something to trade, and join the Raw Milk Freedom Riders and Lemonade Freedom Day for a day of picnic in celebration of our freedom of voluntary exchange. And this is in recognition, if you are new to the podcast or you haven't been following this or whatever, lemonade stands across the country have been raided, cops coming up in uniform, intimidating kids, trying to force them to get hundreds and hundreds of dollars worth of permits just to have a lemonade stand. And so this is standing up against that tyranny. But also, and maybe even a bigger, more dangerous situation, is the oppression of farmers and people who just want to drink milk, just milk.
FDA, yeah.
The FDA has decided to take it on themselves to raid Amish farms and raid other farmers and farmers markets and health food groups and all kinds of places like this. They've gone in at times with SWAT teams, thrown farmers to the ground, poured milk out on the ground, poured milk down city drains.
Poured bleach all over organic food.
Yeah, actually poured bleach. In one case in Los Angeles, they poured bleach. They were literally had a table out like picnic style where people were celebrating healthy food. And these guys poured bleach on the food to keep people from eating it. Now, this is barbaric. And somehow these goons justify their actions. Well, there's some people that are going to stand up to this. And so that's what's happening. The Raw Milk Freedom Riders, Lemonade Freedom Day, are joining together on the 18th of August. That's this coming Saturday, near the Reflecting Pool. And they're going to voluntarily exchange items. Now, this is basic rights here. This is basic property rights. If you can, get down there and be a part of it. If you can't get to Washington, D.C., if you can get to your own city park and set up a lemonade stand, or maybe in front of your house, set up a lemonade stand. And if you can, have a second person or a separate person filming it at a distance, so in case some authorities decide to come around and be thuggish, you can get it on film. Now, one of the things, if you can't get to Washington, D.C., and if you can't set up, something at your own home or in your local park, but you'd like to be a part of this, there's a way that you can be a part too. What you need to do is Saturday, log on to badquaker.com, and we're going to do everything possible to try to have a streaming live feed on badquaker.com, and you can watch the action there. And if you see, If you're watching that live and you see the Capitol Police begin to rough up the folks, the mothers and the children that are going to be there exchanging food and so forth, if you see the Capitol Police arresting these people or roughing them up in any way, we're going to have contact information on badquaker.com for you to call and have a flood of calls into the Capitol Police and let them know what's going on. And like I've said before, I talked to Eddie Free about this, and he's organized a lot of these kind of things, including stuff at D.C., like the Jefferson Memorial Dance Party. And there are times when a flood call is not a good idea. But in a situation like this, flood calls call floods can be extremely effective. And so you can actually be a part of this by doing that. Now, that's my commercial. I wanted to get that out of the way. And now, Kai, what's going to be your part in this coming Saturday?
Well, if everything goes right, I'm planning on actually being there in Washington, D.C. And I'm planning on, I don't know exactly what my level of participation is going to be, but I'll be there and walking around and talking to people, and hopefully I'll be in a Bad Quaker t-shirt, maybe. If not, then just look for the vaguely hippie-looking chick handing out the badquaker.com cards. But
having a small banner.
Yeah, maybe.
We're going to do everything possible to try to have her in a staff t-shirt, so should say staff on the back and badquaker.com on the front, mm-hmm. if you recognize her. And we're going to try to have a small banner for her to hold, or some kind of a signage of some kind, something, mm-hmm. you know, something non-threatening that's not going to get her tased or sprayed.
I would like to avoid being tased, if at all possible.
Now, I mentioned the call floods, or flood calls, as I was calling. I mentioned the call floods, and I've done this before, but I want to say specifically how they're effective and how they can be ineffective. Mm-hmm. In the case with the young lady that was arrested in Texas recently, without getting into too many of the details, she was stopped on the freeway in one of these crazy, supposed to be border patrol crossings, but they're like way away from the border, and it has nothing to do with border control. It has everything to do with
finding small amounts of drugs.
Yeah, rent seeking. They want to confiscate cars. Confiscate. I'm mispronouncing words again. They want to steal your car. That's the whole point of it. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with the war on drugs. It has nothing to do with saving the children.
No.
It's all about stealing your car. So, and fortunately for her, they didn't steal her car. But anyway, getting back to the story, she's driving along down the freeway. They stop her, they harass her, they arrest her, haul her in, and there's this huge flood of calls. And in many ways, it caused a negative reaction with the police in Texas. Mm-hmm. They treated her roughly because of it. The judge threatened her because of it. On the other hand, they turned her loose they could have held her much longer than they did.
Right.
They could have taken her car.
Right.
They could have come up with all kinds of goofy reasons why they suddenly now own.
They could have taken her kid.
Yeah. It could have got worse. So there's no way to speculate. Well, you can speculate, but there's no logic in it. You can't logically speculate as to whether the call floods did good or did bad.
Mm-hmm.
They probably did some good and some bad.
Mm-hmm.
But now this is a different case altogether, and Eddie Free and I have talked about this quite a bit. It's a different case altogether in a situation like what we're looking at in Washington, because in Washington, the D.C. police are a very political-based organization.
Mm-hmm.
They literally answer. They don't answer to, like, the city mayor or whatever. They answer, the Capitol Police are a part of the parks system, and they answer directly to Congress.
Right.
Which, I'm not going to get into that. But I was going to go into the constitutional aspects of this, but I won't. But what that means is they're under a whole different set of motivating factors.
Right.
First off, they're not looking to steal people's cars.
Right.
That's not why they're there.
Right.
They're not, they don't care about...
They're there to make sure that nothing looks bad on CNN.
Exactly. Precisely. So for that reason, if, you know, if harmless mothers, children, harmless activists are handled too roughly, mm-hmm. like what famously happened with Adam Kokesh, where he got thrown to the ground for dancing
right.
and strangled, you know.
Right.
He was actually strangled by one of the DC cops because he was dancing. Now think about that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
You know those people got a lecture over that.
Oh, yeah.
Because the next time when they came back out to do the dance again, they were handled completely different.
Yep.
And Eddie was telling me, and there was a call flood at the time,
mm-hmm.
and Eddie was telling me that once they got them back to the headquarters, to the DC headquarters, they treated them really, really nice because they knew everybody was watching.
Mm-hmm.
Now that's totally different from Texas.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be argued in any direction with what happened in Texas.
Right.
But with the DC police, it's very political and they know it.
Yeah.
And their goal is not to fill their, you know, their stash and their pockets and so forth
yeah.
with more cars and things that they steal out of people's cars, which they do.
Yep.
That's what they're looking for out in Texas with those stops.
Yep.
So anyway, I think I've made that clear that a flood call in this situation.
Call flood.
A flood. A flood call. brain. Will
flood,
do good.
Flood, there's a flood.
It really will do good, and you really can be a part of it by watching on the streaming feed. And if by chance Bad Quaker's streaming feed doesn't work, we'll have a link to one of the others that does work.
Yeah.
So we'll have you covered one way or the other. But you can be involved. That's my whole point, and you can really make a difference in it. So, your turn. I talked. You talk now.
So yay, raw milk lemonade. Yay.
Will this be officially your first actual protest that you go to?
Yeah, I guess so.
You know what the Rolling Stones said about that, don't you?
What?
I went down to the demonstration to get my fair share of abuse.
Well, hopefully I will not actually, you know, get arrested or anything like that. I will have multiple cameras, so if other people start getting arrested, I hope to videotape but not get arrested myself. That's the goal.
Are you going to be by yourself, you think, or might you have someone with you?
I'm not sure. There's probably about a 50-50% chance of me being able to rope somebody into going with me. Otherwise, I'll be by myself.
Okay.
Yeah, so it should be fun.
If you're there by yourself, you should find somebody that's in the organization to get near and, you know...
Well, I intend on hanging around Eddie Free fairly hardcore, because if anybody's going to get arrested in D.C., it's going to be him. Unless Adam Kokesh shows up, in which case, magically, it will all be about him.
I don't know. Adam's modus operandi lately has been to pick out people randomly in the crowd and convince them to do things to get arrested.
Well, that works. Is he tired of getting strangled by the police?
Did you happen to see the video he did where he got tased and mace sprayed anyway, pepper sprayed multiple times just to see what they were like?
Oh yeah, his girlfriend did it.
Well, I don't know the relationship exactly.
Yes, but I saw that one.
Yeah.
He cried. It was funny.
Now it was funny because are you taking pleasure in someone else's pain?
Yes.
What's that called? I can't remember.
Schadenfreude or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Yes.
We can't...
Yes, I am.
We can't elaborate on that wording too much with all the current downloads coming from Germany right now. We can't comment on how odd it is that the Germans would have a word for that.
No, that's about right.
You don't hear about there's not a Finnish word for that, or there's not a Swedish word for that.
Maybe there is. It's just that in Germany, any word is very harsh and, you know.
Well, I don't know. It's almost poetic, though. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay, so what have you been up to lately?
I've been crazily running around the country.
Kayaking,
lots of kayaking.
Getting prepared for your hike of the Appalachian Trail?
Attempting to.
Yeah.
Yes, that should be fun. If it doesn't kill me, it should be a lot of fun.
You're going to start that in the spring, right?
March 1st. Yep, March 1st I'll be on the top of Springer Mountain in Georgia, and I will begin walking to Maine.
Yay.
And hopefully I'll make it and not die.
You know they have cars now. Are you familiar with these?
I am.
Railroads, airplanes.
Yes.
You don't have to walk all the way to Maine.
Yes, you do. There's a trail. It must be walked.
At least ride a pony.
There's a part of it that has wild ponies all through it.
Really? Wild ponies?
Well, I think they're wild.
Hmm.
They're ponies. They're there, hanging out. They're the ones with the shaggy hair in front of their faces.
Oh, yeah? So they're hippies, then?
They're hippie ponies, yes.
They have, like, tie-dyed fur.
They come up to you with a flower in their mouth.
So do we have a topic for today's podcast?
I don't think so.
We're just going to ramble on about hippie ponies and hiking the Appalachian Trail?
Yes. In fact, that might be the title of the podcast.
Hippie Ponies Hiking the Appalachian Trail.
Yes, with raw milk. But I did the math and I figured out I have 3 states, and then I will have collected all of the states east of the Mississippi. I have to go to Alabama, I have to go to Michigan, and I have to go to Maine. I will have collected them all.
You have visited every
yes.
state east of the Mississippi.
Yes.
And most of the ones west, probably.
Let's see, a good portion.
You've never gone up to, like, North Dakota?
No. I'm pretty much missing all of the Canadian border.
Hmm.
I don't really have any of the Northwest.
Yeah.
And I'm missing Colorado.
No. Yeah, no, we didn't go through Colorado.
No.
Did we?
Mm-mm.
Huh. How odd. We avoided Colorado on every trip back and forth.
Yep.
Oh, not that we have anything against Colorado. It just wasn't on the right road. Some of our newer listeners might not know what we're rambling on about, but when Kai was growing up, we did a lot of moving around. We moved pretty frequently. And not only moving, like, within the same town, mostly it was moving from coast to coast or, you know, very rapidly with very little or no warning. Hey, everybody, pack up. We're going to move to Ohio.
If it can't fit in the truck, it doesn't go.
Everything into the dumpster. Beds, washing machines.
We'll get a new one when we get there.
Cheaper to buy a new one than haul this old one.
Mm-hmm.
So,
which is kind of sad, but it completely is most of the time.
Yeah.
For most things, it's easier and cheaper to just...
Actually, that's a good tip for anybody who is moving like that coast to coast. Unless your employer is paying for the move, in many cases it's cheaper because, I mean, furniture nowadays is so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not like 100 years ago an expensive couch was expensive.
Right.
You know, it was a very... it was handmade and it had a lot of craftsmanship. Nowadays, they just staple them together, you know,
they're all made in China and everything anyway, so.
I don't know. I'll bet they're more made in Central America.
Oh, probably.
Because it seems awfully expensive to haul, you know, a chair
right.
all the way from China, as bulky as it is.
Yeah.
It's easier to ship laptops. Okay, well, we haven't really stayed on any kind of logical topic of any kind. We certainly haven't talked about the liberty movement or, you know, property rights or zero aggression principle. Let's go ahead and break for a commercial. And when we come back, maybe we'll be a little bit more organized and maybe we'll stay on topic a little bit better.
You're so optimistic.
Hi, folks. Ben Stone here from badquaker.com. I want to tell you about Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. At Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom, they have video files, audio files, and you can participate in discussions online and in the discussion boards. These audio files are in MP3 format, so you can download them and take them with you. You can listen to them on your drive to and from work or any time that's convenient for you. Now, who is this for? It's for anyone who realizes they don't get the real story in government-approved schools and government-approved history. It's also great for homeschoolers and unschoolers. but it's also good for anybody who wants to learn about liberty while avoiding state propaganda. Take this course and Tom Woods and his team will equip you with one of the very best tools the liberty movement has to offer, knowledge, real knowledge in a usable form. Now, who else are you going to find at Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom? Kevin Gutzman, the author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution, which is on my list of books, plus lots of other noted educators and students that will help guide you to your understanding of history and Austrian economics. So what is this kind of an education worth to you and your family? Well, at Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom, you can get all this for around $8 a month. This gets you access to absolutely everything on their site, all the courses plus additional courses that will be added later in the future, the discussion forums, the optional live sessions, and reading suggestions. Now, how do you do this? Folks, go to badquaker.com. Click on the banner on the right-hand column where you see the ad for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. By using the link at badquaker.com, you'll let Tom know that I sent you, and you'll help keep badquaker.com on the internet. Thank you very much, folks. Okay, and we're back from the commercial. And before we get going, I should have done this earlier in the podcast when I was talking about the milk freedom lemonade stuff. Milk Freedom Riders and Lemonade Freedom Day. But I did want to give a correction to my I did last week a two-part series on how the Irish, many Irish came over here as indentured servants or virtual slaves. Eventually they became, a lot of them organized, units inside inner cities in the big cities on the East Coast. And eventually they became crime gangs. And then eventually that morphed into becoming man for man. Actually, the police, people who were gangs were the police. And then the police, as we know it, police forces, developed out of those gangs. And that was the premise of the two-part series last week. But there was a couple things that I either left out or didn't really, that I need to clarify on. So, on one point that I misspoke, I shouldn't have lumped all, because I was talking about Quakers and how they were against slavery and they worked, in that realm and so forth. But I shouldn't have actually lumped all Quakers together. There were good Quakers that were working hard to stop slavery, and there were other Quakers that were slave owners. So I shouldn't have lumped all Quakers into that same basket. I should have clarified that there's degrees of these things, and humans are individuals, and there's very different groups among them. So it wasn't that all Quakers were angelic and doing all these great things. Some of the Quakers were guilty, just like some of the Puritans, but specifically, there were individual Quakers that really made a big difference in all this. One that was pointed out to me by a listener was John Woolman, was a legendary Quaker that did a tremendous amount of work in getting, individual rights for people and setting slaves free and so forth. So anyway, I wanted to clarify that. And then I left out some stuff too. I was talking about how the gangs were initially formed, and I meant to go into that a little deeper, that actually what you had was, as the early indentured servants obtained their freedom and eventually settled in the big cities on the East Coast like Boston and New York and so forth, what they actually did was they formed organized groups that when more Irish immigrants would come into the cities, they would reach out to those immigrants and help kind of help them get settled in, or help them earn their freedom from their masters. And as they did this, there was a certain loyalty that the new immigrants had to the older immigrants that had already been here. And sometimes this would be a generational thing where you would have maybe one or two generations of Irish that had been here and still working in organizations to help the new coming immigrant Irish that were coming in. And this kind of created mutual aid societies. And those, not always, but in many cases, that was the roots That was the beginning of the formation of the gangs that were forming in the 1820s to the 1840s. And then those gangs themselves actually became the police during that same time frame. And I forgot to mention also that, I did mention that the way that the crime gangs dressed, even after they became official police, up into the 1850s and early 1860s, they dressed by just wearing a big heavy overcoat and a tall top hat. But it wasn't all the way up until the 1870s until actual uniforms became standardized among the city police in the big cities in the East. And the reason why, I would relate it exactly to the reason that so many of these Irish, I talked about them going into Lincoln's war, under false pretenses, but they went into the war. And the ones that came out of that war, many of them returned to those cities and went right back into their old role as, gang leaders or police or whatever. And so there was an instant militarization of the police that took place. And so they formed into squadrons and divisions, and they, adopted military-type uniforms and military-type tactics to deal with the... So that was the beginning of the militarization of the police in America, was in the 1870s, directly after the war between the states, when all those veterans poured back into the cities and became the police. That kind of sounds like now, doesn't it?
Hmm.
Also, one other thing that I didn't get into because I just skipped it out of my notes for some odd reason. I had intended to clarify how Prohibition caused a huge upswing in violence and how that relates to gang violence nowadays. If you consider the gangs from the 1950s and even up into the 1960s, gangs in the big cities, they weren't really, it was just mostly kids hanging out and being, it was more like clubs. They weren't gangs like we think of gangs today. And the difference between the gangs of the 1950s and the 1960s and the gangs that we have in the big cities now is the Prohibition. The prohibition that we face now on drugs, the war against drugs. But the same thing happened in the 19-teens and 1920s and up into the 1930s. Gangs in the late 1800s, were not the kind of violent, there was no crime, violent crime the way you saw it in the 1920s and 1930s. And the reason why is because the alcohol prohibition created an atmosphere where that violence was guaranteed. The alcohol prohibition forced the gangs to turn violent to inflict their business model upon one another. And that's exactly what happened in the 1970s when the war on drugs came about, and further in the 1980s and further in the 1990s. And each time the government has escalated this war on drugs, it's forced the gangs to become more and more violent. So gang membership and gang participation is not necessarily violent.
And it has also militarized the police each time.
Yeah, and that's true. And each time it militarizes the police even further, that act alone forces the crime gangs to become more and more violent. So, really, if you want to end the crime violence, the gang violence that's happening today, take a look at the 1930s. And kill the stupid prohibition. That's all you have to do. It's that simple. There's no, getting tough on crime. That has exactly the opposite response. Cracking down on the borders, we're going to stop the nasty immigrants from coming in. No, all you're going to do is create more violent crime. The thing to do is just to stop the stupid prohibition. And then all of a sudden you've taken away all the funding. And you've taken away the motivation for violence. It's that simple.
I think it's interesting because cops in the on the East Coast were brought about in this manner, but the police forces out West came about in a much different manner.
That's true. In the early, at the same time in the 1800s. when these crime gangs were morphing into police forces in the East Coast cities and in Chicago. It happened in Chicago and New Orleans similarly. This activity was not taking place in San Francisco and Los Angeles and Portland.
Yeah.
They developed very differently. It wasn't until into the 1900s when the progressives were able to take political control and bring the methods of the East Coast into the West Coast cities.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to that, like San Francisco, for example, had committees of vigilance.
Mm-hmm.
And those were neighborhood committees of vigilance, and they were made up of neighborhood people. And they were self-policing.
Mm-hmm.
They did not allow, you know, crime. They did not allow hooligans to get out of control. They did not allow, you know, sometimes those were nasty and oppressive. But you know what you could do is just move to a different neighborhood.
Right.
You know?
Right.
That's all you had to do.
Yeah.
You can't do that nowadays with the police.
No.
Because they have standardized this East Coast formula and brought it upon the whole nation. Now, sheriff's departments have adopted that same formula, which, you know, in the past, in the 1800s, sheriffs were not like that. They were not like police.
No, they were separate and were not, you know, like in the Old West, you see, you know, they had a town, they had one guy in the town who was in charge of making sure everything
Well, and mostly, smoothly. The sheriff's duties were mostly to take care of the requests of the court.
Yeah.
So, for example, if there was a warrant for somebody, then it might be up to the sheriff to go and serve the warrant.
Yeah.
If there was a summons for someone, then the sheriff would go and serve the summons. But the sheriff didn't go around to people's houses and see what they were smoking or what they were growing in their backyard. Or
right.
He didn't, you know, go around to try to find out how fast they were going in their buggies.
Right.
You know, he didn't care about their personal behavior. He only cared about if there was a summons, if there was a warrant, if, you know.
Yeah.
And it really wasn't even like the movies show where he was the one lone good guy standing between you and all the bad guys. You know, that's purely Hollywood.
Yeah.
The committees of vigilance were pretty much all over the West.
Yeah.
Every town had some form of a committee like that.
Yeah.
And it was voluntary, and it wasn't about enforcing individual behavior. It was about...
Well, and a lot of times those committees were also about, you know, keeping the town hall whitewashed and, you know, and putting pavestone down on the road if it needs it, or cobblestone down on the roads if they need it, you know, stuff like that. Lot of that stuff is, that's stuff that they weren't taxing people for.
Right.
They would put together, okay, well, you know, we need to dig a new well or whatever.
Or build a new schoolhouse.
Yeah,
or,
and so they would go collect funds from the citizens and you know,
And that was all voluntary.
Yeah.
Or instead of funds, citizens would volunteer on the day that they were going to do it.
Yeah.
And you would literally have citizens volunteering to go out and pave roads.
Yeah.
Literally making the roads without...
But, you know, it's... I think it's very frightening how militarized the police are becoming. And, you know, the police were certainly more militarized when they began, you know, wearing all the same uniforms and carrying standard issue guns and all of that. But if you look at the police now, there's virtually no difference between what the police wear and what the military wears.
Yeah.
And there's virtually no difference in the armament that they carry and the you know, they're driving not quite tanks, but certainly armored personnel carriers around for protests and for
Well, it's
drug busts.
Are you familiar with a guy named Daryl Gates?
No.
They can't see you shake your head.
No.
Back in the late 70s, Daryl Gates was a very influential member of the Los Angeles Police Department. He eventually worked his way up using, you know, political means, which is what he was an expert at.
Right.
He eventually worked his way up to police chief of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, setting aside the fact that Daryl Gates has made some really nasty racist remarks, and setting aside the fact that Daryl Gates has made some remarks that would be, that would really indicate that he believed that there are certain classes of people that in society that should just be beat down, you know, above and beyond these things. Daryl Gates invented something, and this is according to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Daryl Gates wrote a book, and in the book, he claims he didn't invent this, that other people invented it, but he got behind it when he saw what it was. Mm-hmm. And the mystery thing that I'm talking about is the SWAT team.
Mm-hmm.
In the late 70s, you know, Daryl Gates and some others in the LA police department had witnessed some of the things that had gone on, like the LA riots in the 60s,
mm-hmm.
and like some of the riots in Berkeley in the 60s, and then, like in Philadelphia, or was it Pittsburgh? I think it was in Philadelphia that there was a group of, sort of an underground, almost a cult-like organization that had pretty much taken over a block of housing. I think it was in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cops went in and tried to make some arrests, and they defended themselves against the police by sort of barricading them in themselves in and
right.
defending themselves. And the lovely geniuses in the Philadelphia police decided to fix the problem by literally dropping a bomb on their apartment. It burned a whole block down.
Wow.
It killed a bunch of people. You know, it set everything on fire, and it was really a mess. It was a serious mistake. But Daryl Gates...
What? I can't... But it's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Who would have thought dropping a bomb onto a major city would turn out to be a bad idea? What?
They literally had this homemade bomb that, you know, that the cops made, a homemade bomb, flew over the building in a helicopter and dropped it on the roof, thinking to blow a hole through the roof. And instead, what they did was set the whole block on fire. Fire went out of control. At one point, the police held the fire trucks back and let the people burn in the apartments because they couldn't get out.
Wow.
The cops were on the out. It's sort of a precursor to what Janet Reno did in Waco, where they intentionally lit the place on fire and shot anybody as they ran out, and then the government lied about it. But then the government has actually come out and admitted this. Of course, it's all on film.
Right.
And yet, everybody forgot about it. Everybody remembers the lie, and they forget that the government has admitted the
right.
truth on this. It's just easier to remember the lie than the fact that they actually set the place on fire, burned children to death, and shot anybody who came out to try to surrender. But anyway, I really went off.
Well, you know, at least this president only horribly maims foreign children.
Yeah.
This president hardly maims any American children at all.
Just the one that he actually assassinated, who was
well,
a teenager. I'm going to have to interrupt my train of thought there and break for our next commercial. And when I get back, I'll pick back up on Daryl Gates, and make my point that I was going to make about Daryl Gates. Folks, have you seen the silver and gold trading cards from Shire Silver? You have to check these out. They're specific weights of real silver or gold laminated inside trading cards, and they're a great way to show the world a better way to save, spend, and share precious metals. And now you can buy them using bitcoins or Federal Reserve notes. Folks, you really need to check this out. Go over to Shire Silver, watch the video on the main page, check out the list of merchants that accept silver and gold trading cards, and you can even learn how you can get paid to help spread the word about Shire Silver trading cards. Okay, we're back. Thanks for sticking with us through the commercial. Now, I was talking about Daryl Gates,
mm-hmm.
and then I wandered off into other realms. But
right.
I wanted to make the point of what happened, how we got SWAT teams, because that was the thing that I was hinting at that Daryl Gates basically invented.
Right.
There was a hostage situation in Los Angeles with, I believe it was the SLA? Symbionese Liberation Organization, SLO? No, that's not right. Anyway, whatever their organization was called, it was some kind of a group that was fanatical. They had kidnapped people and robbed banks. They were not good people.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember if it was LAPD or if it was the LA Sheriff's Department, but one way or the other, they had tips that they knew roughly the area that some of these people were in, but they didn't know which house.
Mm-hmm.
So they started moving into this neighborhood. I believe it was Los Angeles Police Department, but I'm not sure about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, they began moving into this into this neighborhood. But they couldn't really just go house by house because these were very violent criminals.
Right.
And they were afraid that if they tried to go house to house, they would just get their cops shot up.
Right.
During that time frame, a reporter had to go to the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So she just went up to a door, knocked on the door to ask if she could go in and use the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And she knocked on the door of the people that the police were there to arrest. They immediately recognized this local news personality, saw that there was police all over the streets, and of course a gun battle immediately happened. Now, because of this, you know, Daryl Gates, everything happens in a crisis.
Right.
As Robert Higgs demonstrated in his book, Crisis and Leviathan, the government always uses crises to escalate government power, to grab more power. Well, that's exactly what Daryl Gates did. He used this situation to show that what they needed was a special team that they would almost never use. It would be in these hostage situations. It would be in kidnap situations. It would be in only the most dramatic of situations, that they could come in with a highly trained, highly specialized group of police officers. And those guys would know how to handle these situations so that, you know, bystanders wouldn't get shot, so that they wouldn't get the wrong house like mm-hmm. they did in this situation. They didn't know which house they were in.
Right.
Well, these would be special people who would know these tactics and be able to handle these situations.
Right.
And, the initial letters were for SWAT, SWAT, was something like Special Weapons Attack Team, SWAT. Yeah, Special Weapons Attack Team. That's what he was going to call it. That was his idea.
Mm-hmm.
And the city council is like, oh, that sounds mean. That sounds like, oh, that's scary.
Mm-hmm.
Let's call it something else that's not so scary. And so he said, okay, how about Special Weapons and Tactics? Oh, okay. You can have the exact same thing you were asking for now because you renamed it and it sounds more pleasant.
Well, that's about right.
It's no longer an attack team. It's and tactics. So the LA Council approved it, and the first SWAT team was born. And it was specifically, oh, it's only for emergencies. We'll never abuse this power.
Right.
Yeah. We should buy that every time the government tells us that, right? So
how's that Department of Homeland Defense coming?
Yeah. Or everything else. Just go all the way back to the Constitution.
Right.
How's the whiskey?
That Constitution panning out?
We're winning on that whiskey rebellion. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
So anyway, so that was the birth of SWAT teams. They were only to be used in these drastic situations where these evil groups had, you know, had kidnapped people or they had a hostage. And, that was the thing. That's how they were going to be used.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then something happened in the Reagan administration. Nancy Reagan got it in her mind that drugs were bad. Maybe her psychic told her or something. You know. Anyway, so Ronald Reagan cranks up the...
except for the drugs that the pharmaceutical companies push down your throats.
Yeah.
Those are good.
Yeah. So the Reagan administration cranks back up the war on drugs. And there was a couple TV shows and a couple movies that glorified the cocaine market.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, one TV show based in Miami, which was entirely almost cartoonish type fiction.
Right.
And, Nikki's on the ball. Nikki's here. Oh, and Meat's here too.
Hi.
We have a special guest. Meat's here. Nikki and Meat. Hi, Meat. Come on in. Anyway, these TV shows glorified the cocaine trade and made it sound like it was a much bigger thing than it was. And of course, with the war on drugs, we've got to crank up this battle on the war on drugs.
Right.
Well, that made cocaine really hard to get a hold of.
Right.
Because they were, you know, cracking down on it.
Right.
So that forced the cocaine dealers to deal in something that was easier to transport, which was crack cocaine.
Right.
Which the market, it was there right along. It was right there in the 70s. People just didn't want it.
Yeah, there was no reason for it.
Yeah, it's nasty. But because there was such a crackdown on regular cocaine, then crack cocaine became easier to transport. It's far more addictive. It's far more damaging to the people who are using it.
Well, the whole thing with the drug war, you see all of these, like you watch the History Channel or something, and they'll talk about how back in the olden days when people were dumb and didn't know anything, all these, you know, cough medicines and all of these things, they all had tons of morphine and opium
and cocaine.
And yet, so, I mean, you had pretty much the entire population of the United States using what we're told are horrific drugs. And yet, we didn't have massive drug wars. There were no drug gangs. There were no...
Yeah, you just go to the pharmacist.
Nobody was being shot over cocaine.
Yeah.
And nobody was having... I mean, there were probably people who, you know, would have an addiction to this substance. Like, there are people who have an addiction to alcohol or
anything else. And like, there are people today that have addictions.
But, I mean, in the grand scheme of things... Was life better then, or was life better now?
Where there are people shooting each other over the same... That's the thing, you never see...
It's massively expensive, and people are literally murdering each other for it.
You never see pharmacists in the 1800s get in turf wars.
No, but, you know, with the way the FDA is cracking down on pharmacists for pain medications now, you might start seeing it for things like Vicodin and...
You never know. But anyway, I'm telling about SWAT teams. I'm telling about Daryl Gates.
Right.
I'm ratting out Daryl Gates.
You have a story.
So because there was a crackdown on coke, and because crack cocaine, or rock as we called it on the West Coast, because crack cocaine was easier to transport and highly addictive, then the market shifted towards that. Now the problem there is, if it's, you know, easy to, it has all these characteristics, that means it's also easier to steal.
Right.
So you would have the problem of drug dealers raiding other drug dealers' houses and stealing the crack, stealing rock cocaine or crack cocaine. So in order to combat the other drug dealers that were stealing from each other, specifically, we're talking about crime gangs.
Right.
Because regular dealers were pretty peaceful.
Right.
They have a tendency to want everything to go nice and smooth and quiet.
Right.
Because, you know, their business depends on it.
Right.
But again, with the influence of the gangs and the influence of the violence that comes with all of this.
Drug gangs are kind of like the corporations of the whole drug structure.
Yeah. They interfere with the free market.
The manager at Walmart is really intent on having you be, you know, happy and friendly and nice. But the owners of Walmart, they really don't care about you. They just want their profit.
Yeah. That's exactly with crime gangs. Anyway, so the gangs got more violent with each other as they struggled for territory and as they struggled with issues of stealing crack from one another and so forth. And so they had to militarize more. Well, now when cops would go in to raid them, they were raiding houses with steel doors that you couldn't just kick open. And another problem with that was when you fortify your door so that the cop can't just kick it open, that gives you time to flush your crack cocaine down the toilet.
Right.
If you've got 10 pounds of coke, you're not flushing it down the toilet.
Not so much.
But if you have the equivalent of crack cocaine, and if you've got two bathrooms in your house, you can get rid of all your cocaine before they can get through a fortified door.
Right.
So to combat that, Daryl Gates needed a solution. He needed a battering ram that could take down a steel reinforced door. So Daryl Gates had this brilliant idea of buying a used armed personnel carrier and building a battering ram on the nose of it so that they could ram a house with this armed personnel carrier. And he was happy about this idea.
This seems like a good idea.
And the idiots in charge of the city of Los Angeles actually thought this was a good idea. And so the militarization of the police and the cracking down on the cocaine trade militarized the gangs further,
mm-hmm.
which hardened their houses, which caused the police to react to that by having armed personnel carrier. And all of a sudden, the SWAT teams were not for the purpose of the rare and unusual case where they have to go in and rescue a hostage. All of a sudden, the SWAT teams were busting crack houses. And they had to have their armed personnel carrier for the crack houses.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had Daryl Gates approached the city council in the very beginning, in the 70s, and said, you know what we need? We need a paramilitary group with armed personnel carriers so that we can bash in people's doors and go in after them for drugs. He never would have floated that.
No.
He never would have got that through. But he used the excuse of the rare hostage situation to get what he wanted, to get his SWAT team.
Yep.
And then it escalated from there, and then he had armed personnel carrier. And this is not a slippery slope argument that we're talking about.
No.
This is running us off of a cliff.
Yeah.
This is a guaranteed result, and you're going to think, well, this is a guaranteed result of them accepting Daryl Gates' idea of a SWAT team.
No, it's the guaranteed result of accepting police.
Yeah. The original idea that you could hire people that would forcibly make other people behave the way you want.
Yeah.
And as I talked about in the... Kai has been on the road and hasn't even had a chance to listen to my two podcasts, so she doesn't know what I'm about to say. But in my two podcasts that I did on the gangs and their relationship to the police, the whole purpose of hiring the gangs as police was to keep those dirty Irish in the right neighborhood and keep them out of the good neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
Because the people in the good neighborhoods didn't want to see beggars on the streets.
Yeah.
Didn't want to see poor people. They didn't want to see the occasional fist fight. They didn't want to see a vendor coming down their street on their, mm-hmm. in their good streets. They didn't want to see the dirty vendors, the poor vendors. But the police, the gangs or the police didn't go into the poor slum neighborhoods and enforce those things.
Right.
There were no police there. And the funny thing is today, if you go into rich neighborhoods and you go into poor neighborhoods, the reason you see a police in a rich neighborhood is to keep out the poor.
Mm-hmm.
Or when they're called for something, somebody needs them and you call them and they come to help you.
Right.
That's what happens in a rich neighborhood. But the police don't go into poor neighborhoods to keep the poor off the streets.
They go in armed to the teeth in SWAT gear and bust down doors for cocaine.
The thing in Anaheim, have you seen the clips of the thing in Anaheim?
Yeah.
Have you seen the clips where the families were in a yard,
yep.
protesting. They were in a yard, families protesting, and the cops surround them and start shooting them with rubber bullets, yep. and so forth, sicking a dog on
a woman holding a baby.
Yeah. That's how the cops react in a poor neighborhood. Can you imagine seeing that same situation in a rich neighborhood?
No.
It's not ever going to happen.
No.
And the reason why is because at its root, the purpose of the police goes all the way back to that Irish, the beliefs about the Irish.
Mm-hmm.
Discrimination against the Irish. Because the rich in the 1800s thought the Irish were a subclass of people.
Yep.
And they needed someone to beat them back into their slums, back into their neighborhoods. And then eventually, it wasn't the Irish. Eventually, it was those dirty Italians and those nasty Jews. And then eventually those were accepted into society, and then it became, oh, it's the Mexicans, it's the black people in mm-hmm. the neighbor, in the wrong, we can't have these black people in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
We have to keep them over there in that neighborhood. And that's really what it's been about this whole time. And we can say, well, that's police bashing. No, it's not.
No.
This is reality. Now, individual police are not evil they're fooled and they believe what they're doing is good.
Well, it's the same thing with anybody else who has bought into the lies of the state. It's not that they're bad people. It's that they're brainwashed people. And they may truly think that they're doing good and they may be trying to do good.
Mm-hmm.
But when you use the force of the state.
Yeah.
The ends never justify the means.
Yeah. Now I'm going to just, a lot of our listeners are going, that's true. That's true. But now I'm going to poke some people in the eye. Can
Not
I do that?
Me. Not me. I need my eyes.
The person who says, yeah, I know, you know, cops are violent, this and that, but we have to have cops to make sure that we're all safe.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what you're doing is you're accepting the idea that some people can use violence to inflict your will upon other people.
Yeah.
Now, and we know that that's wrong.
Right.
That's immoral. Okay, so we can accept that. And yet, when you vote for somebody and they go into government, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Aren't you doing that exact same thing?
Yeah.
When you vote for a person to go into government and use the force of government for whatever purpose,
yep.
Even if you believe you're doing good, aren't you doing the same thing? Aren't you using the aggression of government to try to accomplish what you think is a good means, is a good ends?
Yep.
So, you know, voting is bad.
Voting is bad. Yay.
So we actually had a little bit of a point in this podcast.
So it turned out that this was the, what did we say, the hippie pony hiking the Appalachian Trail with the SWAT team.
Yeah.
Podcast.
Oh, we need to put Daryl Gates' name into it.
Oh, yeah.
Daryl Gates and a SWAT team on the Appalachian Trail. Maybe we better just wrap it up before we get so goofy that we don't have any more listeners ever again.
I can hear listeners going, what is this? Click.
Okay, so I don't know if you're going to get to do any more podcasts with me this week or not.
I'm not sure, but if you're in the Washington, D.C. area on Saturday, come by, find me, say hi. I might be doing a banner thing where I'm going to get as many people as possible to sign the banner, and then there may be auctioning it off for charity. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe not charity. Maybe
gas.
Maybe gas. We'll see.
Okay, so let's wrap it up. For more on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. Thanks for coming on the show, Kai.
You're welcome.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.